A lot of people always say something like, life happens for a reason. Everything happens in life for a reason. I feel like in my life and in my career, everything's kind of happened by accident. I never wanted to be a journalist or a nonfiction writer. There are people who say I'm still not a journalist or a nonfiction writer. But I never wanted to be a nonfiction writer. I hated nonfiction growing up. I loved TV, really bad TV. Shows like Saved by the Bell and Three's Company. My parents, fearing the worst, made a rule when I was little that we had to read 2 books a week before we were allowed to watch TV. So I became a speed reader and fell in love with books so I could watch Saved by the Bell. By the time I graduated from college, I realized I wanted to be a writer. I locked myself in an apartment a few blocks from here, and I wrote 9 novels in a year, not something I recommend for anyone. They were deep, dark stories that took place in bars in New York City because I was reading Bret Easton Ellis at exactly the wrong time in my life. I was rejected by everyone in publishing, got 190 rejection slips, had them taped to my walls like a serial killer. I was even rejected by a janitor at a publishing house because I sent a manuscript to an editor who was no longer working there, and it got thrown in the trash, and the janitor took it out of the trash, read it, and then rejected me. I kept going. My dad is a doctor, so I decided I would try and write a medical thriller. So I wrote a book called Threshold. It was my first published book. I think I was 25. None of you ever read it. It sold 3 copies. It got me a second book called Reaper, which was about a computer virus that makes the jump to the biological world and people start getting sick from their TV sets. And I came up with the idea after watching a bad episode of Oprah. I can say that. She doesn't have a book club anymore, right? So I can say that. That became a really bad TV movie called Fatal Error. I hope none of you saw that. It starred Antonio Sabato Jr., remember the underwear model from Melrose Place? He played a surgeon, which was very believable casting. I didn't know surgeons did so many sit-ups in between each patient. And I remember watching that movie with my dad, and there's a scene where he's leaning over a patient's chest, and he goes, "We've got a subdural hematoma." And my dad turned to me and said, "You know that's in the head, right?" Anyways, I was a struggling sci-fi writer. Nobody was reading my books. And I used to hang out in a local bar, an MIT dive bar, called Crossroads, which is, you know, a lot of you are MIT people. It's full of kind of geeky people. I'm geeky, so I can say that. And there was this group of kids who hung out there who were just like everyone else, but they had tons of money. And it was all in $100 bills. And the thing is, in Boston, you never see $100 bills, right? In New York, you see $100 bills. In Vegas, they come out of the ATM machine. But in Boston, you never see hundreds. So I went over to the main guy, and I'm like, "Why do you have all this money in $100 bills? And he said, "Come over to my apartment." So I went to his apartment in the South End, and it was way too nice for an MIT kid. And he points to his laundry. And in his laundry was $250,000 in stacks of hundreds. So I immediately think, this kid's got to be a drug dealer, right? But he didn't look like a drug dealer. He was real geeky. He was Asian. I didn't even know if there were Asian drug dealers. And I was like, "Why do you have $250,000 in your laundry?" And he's like, "Well, come to Vegas with me tomorrow." So I got on a plane and I flew to Vegas. And there were 5 of his buddies on the plane, and they all pretended they didn't know each other. We landed in Vegas. There's a limo picks us up, takes us to a suite in a big strip hotel. We had a swimming pool. We had a butler. I didn't even know what to do with a butler. We have a butler. And the MIT kids start coming out and pulling money out from under their clothes. And they pile it up on the table, and it was $1 million in cash. And they said, "We're the MIT blackjack team." Now, I had heard of something called the MIT blackjack team. I thought it was like a math class at MIT where they learn how to play blackjack. But the truth is, this had been going on for 25 years. One group of students would train the next group of students, and the next group of students, the secrets to beat the game of blackjack. And this group I had met had won $6 million playing blackjack. And I was blown away because it was better than all the crap I'd been writing, but it happened to be true. So it became my first nonfiction book. I wrote an article for Wired magazine about the story, and I was sitting at home watching Saved by the Bell. And the phone rings, and it was Kevin Spacey. There was a guy who said, "I'm Kevin Spacey." And I said, "No way," and I hung up on him. And I called my mom, and I'm like, "Mom, Kevin Spacey's trying to call me." And she's like, "No, it's the MIT kids prank calling you," because they used to prank call me all the time. But it really was Kevin Spacey. I flew out to L.A., and he says, "I want to make a movie out of this." I'm like, okay, that sounds great. Let's make a movie. So he takes it out to every studio in Hollywood, and every studio rejected it except for MGM, which happened to be the casinos that we were hitting as the MIT Blackjack team. So I was like, how did that, why do you want this movie? Are you really going to make it? And they said, we love your story because it makes people think they can geek the game of blackjack. And I always see people reading the book on the flight to Vegas, and I feel so bad. That's the worst time to read my book because you're going to lose. You actually have to be so perfect that you can't make one mistake an hour, or it's worse than not card counting at all. Anyways, we're about to have this big movie premiere in Vegas. And again, I'm sitting at home watching Three's Company, and I get a weird email from a kid from Harvard, and it says, my best friend founded Facebook and no one's ever heard of him. So I had heard of a guy named Mark Zuckerberg, but that wasn't this guy's name. So I went out to a bar at the Westin, and this kid walks in, and he's Eduardo Saverin. A lot of you have seen the movie. He looked like Andrew Garfield, not quite as good looking, kind of ugly Andrew Garfield, you know, Hollywood. Like, that was the best looking group of MIT kids ever in the movie 21, wasn't it? But anyways, he walks in, and he sits down, and he has two drinks, and he says, Mark Zuckerberg fucked me. And I said, tell me more. And he starts to tell me that crazy story, you know, two geeky best friends who couldn't meet girls. Mark goes on a really bad date and gets home and then hacks into all the computers at Harvard, pulls up pictures of every girl on campus and makes a website where you can find out who's the hottest girl at Harvard. He was even comparing girls to farm animals. And when he got caught, he said, well, the girls were beating the farm animals, so I shouldn't get in trouble. And that shows you his social awareness at the time. Anyways, he makes it into the newspapers and catches the eyes of the Winklevi twins. You could not invent these guys if you wanted to, right? 6'5", identical twin Olympic rowers, the cool kids on campus. They were members of the Porcillian, the ultimate finals club that goes back 300 years. The rumor at the Porcillian is if you hadn't made your first million by the age of 30, they give you $1 million. I don't believe that's true. The Winklevi, I remember meeting them in a hotel room. I was with my wife and Cameron or Tyler. I mean, who can tell, right? One of them says, you look at us and you think we've got to be the bad guys in this story because if this were an 80s movie, we'd be dressed as skeletons chasing the Karate Kid around the gym. And I actually put that in the book, and Aaron Sorkin put that in the movie, and then Ralph Macchio called me and was like, I love that we're talking about the Karate Kid. But anyways, the Winklevi were working on their own website. They see Mark in the paper, so they hire him as their geek. Mark doesn't think much of them, but, you know, plays along. Then he goes to his friend Eduardo and says, I've got an idea for a website. If you put up $1,000, you can be CFO and have 30%. No lawyers, you know, there's no papers. He puts up $1,000, the greatest investment in the history of the world. And Mark builds Facebook. It spreads all over, gets to Stanford, and that's where Sean Parker comes into the story. He's the cool kid of Silicon Valley, the Armani suit, but he's got the EpiPen in his pocket because he's allergic to everything. He's the kid who founded Napster in high school, and that was sued out of existence. And then he founded Plaxo. And then he was caught with cocaine and got fired from Plaxo. And then he was the first president of Facebook until he got caught with cocaine. But it wasn't his cocaine. It was allegedly cocaine. Sean was the cool kid. He sees Facebook and he says, I want to be a part of this. And they start leaving Eduardo behind. Eduardo freaks out, freezes their bank accounts. They fly Eduardo out to California. He meets with some lawyers and they make him sign something that dilutes him to zero. He goes back to Boston, realizes what happens, and sues Zuckerberg. The Winklevi, who are off rowing in the Thames, did I say it right? They sue as well because they're not a part of Facebook. And that's where I came into the story, right? No one was supposed to be talking to me. Eduardo was in the midst of this lawsuit. He had come to me to try and force Facebook's hand. Well, I thought this was a great idea. I wrote a 14-page book proposal. It leaks onto the internet on Gawker.com. Suddenly, everything goes crazy. Facebook settles with Eduardo for $5 billion. The first page of the settlement agreement says, you may never speak to Ben Mezrich again. Literally. He sends a restraining order to me. He breaks up with his girlfriend because it's my wife's best friend. And he moves to Singapore, never to be heard from again. No, I'm not angry. For $5 billion, none of you would ever talk to me again either. I think my parents would probably never talk to me again. Anyways, this is all interesting. Meanwhile, Aaron Sorkin reads my proposal on the internet and calls up and says, I want to write this as my next movie. Wow, right? David Fincher sees it on the internet and calls up and says, I want to direct this, but we have to do it right now because who knows if Facebook will be around in a year. So I'm like, wow, this is all awesome, except I haven't actually written a book. So I locked myself in a hotel in Boylston, and in 3 months I wrote the book. Aaron Sorkin came to the hotel, and the next 3 weeks he wrote the movie, and it became The Social Network. And my life changed again. And so when people say, you know, life happens for a reason, I like to say, for me anyways, it happened mostly by accident, and mostly I owe it all to two shows, Three's Company and Saved by the Bell. Thank you very much.